the Honorable Luis Quinones is going to be conducting your hearing, so he's the next voice that you hear, okay?
Mr. Rep, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you state the full name of the ADC member for the record, sir?
Richard Michael Rep, DOC number 111593.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. As you can see on your video conference screen, we have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. Next to me, we have the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin your hearing with the following summary. Mr. Richard Rapp, ADC number 111593, is 57 years old. The crimes of dangerous drug violations committed while on release occurred on or about June 5, 1992. He was approximately 30 years old at the time of the incident offenses. He was found guilty by jury trial on September 21, 1994, and sentenced on October 26, 1994. He is technically eligible for parole effective October 26, 2018. The incident offenses were part and parcel of a three-count concurrent sentence of life imprisonment, which included misconduct involving weapons, the weapons charge which has since expired. For the board members, again, this gets confusing because Mr. Rapp was also sentenced to a five-count concurrent life sentence for aggravated robbery and kidnapping, of which he is not eligible for parole. Well, just let me finish this. At the end of the day, sir, we're going to be having a parole to consider regular parole. I'm sorry, a sentence to consider regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. What I was trying to say to my colleagues is that there's this overlapping sentence factor. What I was getting at was that you're technically not eligible for the new parole until March 9, 2019. So today you're being considered for regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, but under the new set of charges, you're not eligible for parole until March 9, 2019. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so you're eligible, but we're seeing you before then. So if this board saw fit to grant you regular parole or home arrest, you would still have to be inside the Department of Corrections until March 9th, 2019. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. He has a criminal history, which includes arrest for weapons violations, obstruction, and possession of stolen property, and convictions for possessions of dangerous drugs and transportation of dangerous drugs, which resulted in probation. Does that sound correct, Mr. Rapp?
That was mine. Yes. That was my first set of cases.
Yeah, that was in the past.
Yes.
Certainly that's not what we're here for today. We're just giving the history.
All right.
I will read a summary of the offense in question, so just give me a moment. On June 5th, 1992, a drug investigation was being conducted by the Yuma County Task Force in Mesa, Arizona. When it was learned that Richard Rapp and Dana Milligan were involved in the sale of methamphetamine from the room at the Dobson Ranch Inn in Mesa. While under surveillance, Rapp and Milligan left in their pickup truck, were stopped a short time later by Arizona DPS. During the stop, Mr. Rapp emerged from the passenger side of the vehicle holding the black bag which he dropped. Found in the small of the defendant's bag was a knife concealed under his shirt. In the black bag was found approximately $4,000 in a bag containing 6.94 grams of methamphetamine. Found under the passenger seat of the vehicle was a .380 caliber handgun. Found in the Milligan's purse was a small amount of methamphetamine. Also found in the vehicle were a cellular phone, pager, binoculars, scales, drug ledgers, and a calculator. And again, Mr. Rupp, that's just a summary of the offense. According to Mr. Webb's institutional progress report, he's had considerable program in the AUC. He has a release plan which includes seeking an interstate compact in Illinois, living with his daughter, finding work, and becoming a motivational speaker. Again, does this sound correct, Mr. Webb?
Yes, it does.
He has had significant discipline in AUC from 1998 to 2017, with his last major on July 13, 2016 for drug possession. Note, in the past, he has had 7 majors for drug possession plus refusal to submit UA, threats of assault. And I'm not going to go down the whole list, Mr. Webb, but I'm just getting into the past of your tickets. This is Mr. Webb's 3rd hearing before the board. His first hearing was in 1995, in which he was granted parole to his next consecutive sentence. He has numerous letters of support in his parole packet. So, Mr. Webb, this is another chance for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us about the offense that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you should be considered for a regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest? Thank you, sir.
You want me, sir?
Yes, sir.
To sum it up, I'm actually guilty of everything I've ever done. I've never sugarcoated. I never act like as if I was here unlawfully or wrong. If we back up to January 1980, that's when I joined the military. At that point in my life, I had a wife. I had a 3-year-old daughter. I was living in the Midwest. The unemployment rate was so high off the chart at the time, there was no jobs to get. Because of me being a father at 16, I had absolutely no education at that point. I joined the military so I could learn a trade and get an education, which I did. And that's when I was introduced to methamphetamine, which is probably one of the worst things I've ever had. But actually is. When I was released from the military under general discharge, I wound up out here in June of 84 to do construction, because they're right in the middle of construction boom. And I'm an electrician by trade, so I started working for an electrical company. And there was a lot of methamphetamine around, and I got myself back involved doing methamphetamine, which actually led to me selling it, so I could support my habit. It ruined my life in more ways than I could possibly ever. I couldn't explain enough words of how bad it ruined my life. I lost my wife over it, lost my family over it. I basically lost everything you could possibly imagine. And that took us up to like about June of 87, and from June of 87 till February 7, 93, I basically was just doing methamphetamine and selling them so I could support my habit, and made a whole lot of bad choices. As you look at my dictionary, you see a lot of dirty ways. I've never touched methamphetamine ever again since I've been in prison. Scared to death of it, I hate it. At one point, there's no excuse. I went down a path. Got a little strong on heroin at one point in my life in prison. I never seen heroin in my life until I was 4 years old. And it's just been a struggle off and on. I don't know how deep think my package goes in to who I am or to who I was, but I'm at Buckley Unit, which is a PCR. I'm an ex-gang member. And I just walked away. My mom died in July of 2016. It was like the final straw. And I decided to put every bit of that behind me. I reconnected with my family. And I've basically been talking to them and seeing them ever since September of July of 16. And I've had every counselor, every teacher I've ever had I'm sitting across from a psychologist. I remember sitting there silently thinking that he doesn't have a clue of what I've been through. And a few times when I almost took the drug, it's because I had somebody who was in support of me who'd been down that road. And I was more apt to listen to them.
That's understandable, Mr. Rapp. Let me begin by saying, for encouragement, you do present very well. And I appreciate your honesty about your drug use inside the Department of Corrections. We recognize that's a problem. You know, we're not naive. How long have you been clean?
I've been clean since the day I walked off the yard. I was on the step down there in Tucson. That would have been September 12th, 2016. That last, during UAK, you see me there in 2016, was right when my mother died. And there is no excuse. I'm not trying to get excuses. But before that time, I actually went quite a long ways with another UAK. George was part of my life in prison before that point.
Well, sir, hold on. Just a quick question. You slipped up around the time of your mother's death. How long were you clean before that slip up?
Oh, I was clean for years. If you look at the dates, all my dirty weight tapes are all between 2000, 2002 and 2003 up to like 2008. I was pretty much clean before that point, and just I went through about a 7-year span where once I got hooked on heroin, it was just a struggle on and off trying to get myself back off of it.
You mentioned something about a gang, and we don't have real specific notes, at least as I skimmed through them in Ames, but were you involved with an STG for a while inside prison?
Yes, I'm actually one of the SDGs on this yard. I'm classified as an unactive SDG gang member.
Is it safe to ask you which one?
It was the Aryan Brotherhood.
Okay. So how have you been able to separate yourself from that life and maintain your security?
Because I'm on DC here.
Okay.
A lot of people are here. There's a lot of ex-gang members are here because prison is a society within society. And a lot of them are here because they did something really, really wrong on the other side, on the GP side, so they had no choice to leave. I just walked off. One night, it just spun my head. I got to think about all the stupid shit that I've done through my life, and I just packed up my stuff. I got a hold of the Lieutenant Hansen and told him I'm done, and I just walked off. And then I spent the next year and a half in the hole, where you got to go through the process to see if you're being true about wanting to give up the game life. The final step is you have to pass a polygraph. And once you pass a polygraph, then you're allowed to go to one of the PC yards. And the people in charge of that is a Lieutenant Reno and CIU Pruitt. And I did extensive interviews with them, and they were fully convinced that I was done with that life. So it allowed me to take the next step, which was the polygraph, which I passed the first time, and I've been over here now for about a year.
Well, I appreciate you accounting for that, and I guess I have one of those curiosity questions. How is everyone getting along in your yard? I mean, with these people being removed from other situations?
Out of control.
What's that?
It's actually out of control. I don't have no real enemies in my life. Since I'm on a yard where there's no gang activity, there's no reason for me
unsafe. We don't wish anyone to be unsafe. And it's always tragic when that sort of behavior continues in the system. I have some practical questions. One is, you mentioned the young marriage and the military, etc. In your plan, you hope to live with your daughter. We recognize there's a process that if you're ever given an opportunity for regular parole, that you can apply for an interstate compact. But do you still have a relationship with all your family, or where are you at now with your family?
I have a relationship with everyone, with all my family. I have a 41-year-old daughter, I have a 33-year-old daughter, and I have a younger sister and a younger brother. All their kids were not born yet when I came to prison. I've got a good relationship with my brother, my sister, and my oldest daughter. If you still got me a packet there, they all wrote letters.
Yes, I mentioned the summary that we had several letters of support, so please don't feel like we dismissed that. We saw that you
had I didn't think that you dismissed it. I'm just pretty sure I was sitting thinking that my mom probably has one in there. She filled it out before. To be honest, I had no relationship with my family for almost 20 years, which I made a big mistake by thinking it was best for all of us if I didn't contact them, which turned out to be the worst, another bad thing I did. Because at one point, I really thought when I was 32 years old, all the time I got, I really didn't expect myself to get out of here. I figured I probably would have been
Well, you know, Mr. Brown, I try to be encouraging as a board member, and I want to say that it might have been a bad decision for you, but I do think it was kind of an honorable decision. It sounds like that you were trying to separate yourself from the troubles. Am I correct?
The guilt is probably eating me up from the inside out. It's almost impossible for me to write a letter without always starting to say I'm sorry or I apologize. As more years passed and I got to reflect on what I did, it seemed like the guilt was telling me more than anything. But through all those years, I sent Christmas cards, birthday cards every year to the whole family, always have. And now I realize that all my oldest daughter wanted was her dad. I just wish I would have realized that 26 years ago. When you're doing drugs like methamphetamine, it totally anesthetizes your brain. You don't even realize how bad you're hurting other people. You think you're hurting only yourself, but you hurt so many other people. Lives are affected by that. And you don't really understand that until you get into prison and as you get more clean time in, your mind becomes more clear. And I think after a certain amount of years, I wasn't even trying to get back in touch, like I said, just because of the guilt.
Okay, so here's a tough question, and I recognize it'd be easy just to say what we want to hear. We wouldn't know any different, but what is your plans for keeping your addiction under control should you be released to the community? And this is not to say that because you have an addiction, you'll never be released to the community. All I'm saying is, what is your plans for dealing with it? Because it is a concern that people have a good plan about their rehabilitation. We recognize that when someone's addicted to alcohol or drugs, they're pretty much addicted for the rest of their lives mentally, if you will. And it's a struggle to stay clean, and they have to work at it. So what's your plan to stay clean?
Well, it's exactly what you said. It doesn't matter if you're clean for one day, 1 year, or 10 years. It's an ongoing, lifelong struggle. First thing I do, I have to go sign up for some a counselor, or I don't know how to explain it, but it definitely concerns me too. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I'm just going to quit, I'm just going to quit. I know it's a lifelong struggle. I've had serious years behind me clean, so I know I can do it. I can't use the excuse that my mom died when I slipped up, because that's just something else to say. But the main thing that helped me stay clean is that I couldn't live myself if I ever just found my daughter again. My oldest daughter was 10 when my first wife left me, so we spent a full 10 years together. My youngest daughter was only 2 when they left, so my youngest daughter doesn't actually know me at all. We just, in the past year and a half, started writing and talking to each other. But I realize the importance of how I can take classes and keep moving in that direction. I can keep myself busy. My oldest daughter is a nurse in Illinois in the Department of Corrections, and she works in the county jails. And she's been a godsend.
Well, so in your audience, that's very impressive. I happen to have a lifelong friend that went to work in corrections as a nurse in a different state, just as a matter of fact. And I know they're special people, and I think you can be really, really proud of that. Very special folks. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you at this point. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
So I've seen, have you put in for interstate compact Illinois?
I've been trying to do that for months. I wrote a whole thing out here going all the way back to August. I went to my CO3, his name was Hayes, and I ran down to him what I need to do, and he didn't have a clue on what I was asking or how to be done. And I wrote several kites that wasn't answered. Then when we got to September, October, I got a new counselor named Vance, wrote her several kites, couldn't get nothing answered. It wasn't until January when CO3 Vance finally calls into her office and tells me she finally learned how to do it. And I told her she just couldn't answer one of my kites and told me she didn't understand how to do it because I would try to run a different route. Because interstate contract is definitely where I don't want to go. Just to be honest with you, me being an ex-game member of SGG, coming on PC, my life is almost going to be a little bit in danger staying here in Arizona, going to a parole office or going to a halfway house. I actually know of cases where people went there and found themselves back in the hospital because I have a hit on my head from the game. And my biggest nightmare would be to go to a halfway house out here. And my daughter is more than willing to accept something there. I would get a job instantly. I don't care where it would be. Because I want to eat a couple things at once. I want to get a job. I want to go to the NA, AA. And then I want to figure out a way to where I start maybe talk to high school kids or even adults.
So Mr. Rapp, let me make sure I'm hearing you clearly, sir. So until you can get your interstate compact, you would prefer to not be released until you can get that interstate compact that you're working on now?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
It'd be the best. It's just a smart thing to do.
Okay. All right.
Illinois.
Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
I do know that Illinois will accept me. I know I was told the cost was $200. I would be able to raise that money. Because I was trying to get it all worked out. When I come and talk to the board in June, I was told that my next call date wasn't until March 9th. And then they came to me in December and told me my date got moved up to January 14th. And then for some reason, January 14th got canceled. And then it was rescheduled for February 11th.
Okay. So are you are are you guys, since you talked to the CO3, you currently, are you in the process of trying to get your interstate compact now, or what's the status?
Yes, I'm just working on the paperwork. The last time I talked to CO3, she was doing the paperwork on the computer. She personally told me three or four weeks ago that she was going to send her report to me, give me the paperwork, so I started filling it out. And I actually got so frustrated at one point because she wasn't answering me. I went to talk to my CO4, Cortez, and I explained to him how I was about to interstate compact, and he expressed to me how he just learned how to do it. And he said he'd get back with me. And I told him, I said, I don't have enough time at this point because the 11th is only a week away at this point. But I'm working on it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rapp.
All
right. Any further questions from colleagues? Okay, Mr. Rapp, we're getting very close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We really ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, especially in the interest of time management, because we've heard really detailed information from you already. But is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before this board goes into discussion? Thank you, sir.
Well, I don't know how I can actually add to it. I expressed what the guilt was. I do have serious sorrow for an individual's lives, and I would spend the rest of my life trying to fix it. It's part of the reason why I want to go talk to kids. I feel as if I have a lot to give as far as give back. I'll be 58 years old here pretty soon. So me getting out, get back on the streets, trying to get back into electrical work and almost be possible. I don't even know if my body can handle that anymore. But all I ever think about is this, I just want to go home. I want to be with my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids. Because you're never going to see me again. I'm so far down that life. I've been down that life for a while. But I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. I'm guilty of all my charges. There's no if, ands, or buts about it. I made some terrible mistakes, and I made a lot more than just one. But if you look at my history, I didn't really start having problems until I was 27. I kind of grew up in a pretty good family, and even that's kind of mind-boggling, how I went from how I grew up to where I wound up. Just want to go home and call it a day. But I definitely understand, I mean, I'm more than willing to stay as long as it takes to get the interstate compact built like I told you, over the halfway house thing. It would be a rural part of Illinois is where I'd be going. There's not really a whole lot down there except for a lot of farmland. And I actually feel good about the fact that my family actually wants me to come back. Because deep in my heart, I feel as if I don't deserve to go back. But I know it's my last chance to keep my family. I can't disappoint. If it breaks my daughter's heart, if I even remotely thought about going back down that road, and I won't. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rapp. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona? So if you'll just stay on the phone and listen in, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rapp. The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, Mr. Rapp's not the first person in this world from a decent family or positive environment who went down a bad road. I certainly more understand those stories. I think his motivation for doing right by his daughter and his children is very real, and I also appreciate that he is in touch with the fact that rehabilitation is going to be a part of his life, whether it's inside the Department of Corrections or in the community. I see a tremendous promise in Mr. Rapp in terms of having the potential for being returned to the community. I think at concern, but I'm not a closed door on this, is that he had a ticket as recently as 2016, but this is not to suggest that there's a magic number where someone is ready to be returned to the community. I look hard at how an individual's been behaving inside the Department of Corrections as not a standalone founder, but certainly one of them. Probably one of the most impressive things I learned from him is his own decision to request to be held inside the Department of Corrections until interstate contact can be settled. And I'll just say out in the open, I've never heard anyone show that much personal responsibility for a plan. But as always, colleagues, we have to make some very tough decisions on behalf of the people of Arizona, and I think that's where I'll start the discussion. Yes, sir, the Honorable Ms. Gilman now.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. I hear the same promise that you hear from Mr. Rapp. I am very impressed with his sense of accountability and responsibility for what he did. And as he's used the phrase a couple of times, he didn't sugarcoat anything. He just tells it like it is, and I do appreciate that. My only concern would just be the mechanics of this, because he clearly does not want home arrest, and that's often what we start with, is a home arrest situation. But given that he wants to go out of state, we've certainly had cases where I know that we've granted, I don't know whether home arrest or parole, definitely I can remember some home arrests that we granted, and then 6 months later the inmate is still waiting because no suitable placement can be found. And I'm wondering if something similar could happen with a parole. Well, I've heard the catch-22 that you can't apply for interstate compact until you've been granted parole.
That's a good
and
point.
But then you can't be granted, you know, we generally start people on home arrest. So just what if parole were granted and Mr. Rapp could just sit where he is then until the interstate compact paperwork could go through? That's just a thought, but I would be in favor of that if we think something like that could possibly happen.
I don't think it's not a complicated maneuver to consider regular parole and make a notation that he's asking to be on hold until mm-hmm. he can receive an IC. Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of safety in that. And it's a unique decision, but I'm open to it. Mr. Johnson?
I understand what you're saying about the parole, but I think that, if we deny his parole at this time and just give him 6 months to work on getting his interstate compact, I mean, I have seen one that, you know, a person got his interstate compact and was released at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen that. We had one case where we actually had that. And it was a recent, it was the guy that was in, that went to Las Vegas and came back here and got violated. Mm-hmm. But he had an interstate compact to Vegas, But I would think that in order for him to get an interstate compact, it's going to take a lot of work on behalf of his family to work with him in Illinois to actually get it. So even if we paroled him, my concern of paroling him is that he feels as though he states that he has a hit out on him. If he was paroled, then he would have to go to a halfway house here unless he got the interstate compact.
Well, I think what he was requesting, and again, I don't know if there's that much leeway in the system, but he's asking to stay in
until he gets an IC. Right, until he gets his interstate compact. But if we placed him on parole, then there's a good, you know, there's a possibility that he would get released on parole to a halfway house.
Okay.
You know, he could get released, you know, something could happen. And so that is his fear. So I would think that if he had, you know, 6 months to work on and come back before this board, then we could take that under consideration at that time. At least he would be safe while he's working on the interstate compact. He says he has talked to the CO3 that they're going to be bringing him the paperwork to get that started. So that process has to be completed. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it would take, but hopefully in 6 months he could have that done.
I'll refer to all of my colleagues or in-house community corrections officer, but again, because that's always a little fuzzy part of the process, because we don't approve an IC, this board doesn't approve an IC, but
right.
Again, is it possible to secure an IC before an individual is released? Is there like a horse before the carriage issue?
I never personally have seen it happen. Generally, you have to have an approved release in order to, for example, anybody that wants an interstate compact that's in prison has to put in a placement for an Arizona residence, even if they have no intention of staying there, in order to be able to have their interstate compact transfer investigated and approved. The danger with that is if that interstate compact falls through, or in this case here, it is approved. He has so much time after it's approved. I believe that it is 120 days. I'm not 100% sure of that time frame. That's just a guesstimate on my part. But from the time that it is approved, and then if his hearing was within that 6 months, he might be able to do that, and then he just doesn't go to his approved Arizona residence. But generally, you have to have a release date calculated. In order for TimeComp to have a release date calculated from due to the interstate compact. So it's something that's going to have to be investigated a little bit more by his CO4 and TimeComp to see if there's a way that they can, you know,
A follow-up on that, and one of my colleagues may have already answered it, but can you seek IC while still on home arrest? Do you have to be on regular parole to IC?
I can't answer that question.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Mr. Cairns, one more question. So can a person have parole pending an interstate compact?
That's something that would have to be confirmed with TimeComp because of the fact that it's a pending status.
Sooner than 6 months, I'm getting more informal here, but I'm thinking the conservative move was to recommend returning in 6 months and see what can be accomplished in that interim. Because certainly we have to think about safety and security and the success of the inmate. But what numbers?
You did that last time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion if there's no further input. And that is my recommendation. And let me also point out, too, that he's not technically eligible for parole until March 9th anyway, so there's some time that was pending. But to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest, but I will not ask for 1 year set off which would mean you'd be certified eligible to come before this board again in 6 months. And perhaps Mr. Rapp can have a stronger release plan by that time. And that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
So seconded by Mr. Neal, written by Mr. Johnson and Ms. Rittenhouse. I'm not asking for when we set off. We set the values for 12A, for 11, and page A.